Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we're here talking about your all-star breaking Toronto Blue Jays. We're about to get back at it as the weekend begins, but we're here recording this on Thursday. Again, my name is Drew. This is the Athletics podcast about the Blue Jays. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to The Athletic at Spin Rate. Wait, theathletic.com/spinrate. You can read everything Caitlin writes. Caitlin McGrath covers the Jays for The Athletic. Once a week, she and I break it down. And then once a week, I break it down with former Blue Jays all-star, current MLB radio personality. See him on Sportsnet. You hear him once a week on this very podcast. Ricky Romero. Ricky joins us. Beautiful downtown Mississauga. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. I missed you last week. I feel like a lot of stuff has happened. Holy smokes. Like, from Charlie getting fired to the Jays ending on a good good streak, I guess, at the end of the season there. They ended up pretty good, and obviously the All-Star game. So I feel like we have a lot of stuff to dig into. I'm looking forward to it.
We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's start with the All-Star game. Obviously, a lot of Blue Jays featured prominently. Two Blue Jays starters. Alek Manoah came in, pitched really well. Santiago Espinal got like way more playing time than I ever would have considered. I did not think he was going to get that much run. Good for him to get out there. You know, we talked a little bit about it before we were recording, but I don't know. What did you think about the All-Star game at Dodger Stadium and what we saw from some of the Blue Jays?
I thought it was solid, man. I mean, obviously, we're talking off air about, I couldn't imagine being a person trying to get into that stadium because the parking situation or getting in situation is beyond atrocious at Dodger Stadium. It always has been. So I can't imagine, you know, trying to get in and out. I can't imagine that being fun. But other than that, the home run derby was fun. I feel like I like this new format. I guess the only issue I have, and you let me know what you think, Drew, is we have a guy like Julio Rodriguez who hits all those home runs, and Juan Soto, almost like he never really finished a round, and then he ends up the winner. But Julio Rodriguez clearly hit the most home runs, and it obviously happened with Vladdy too a couple years ago and stuff like that. I wonder if the format there should change a little bit in the home run derby.
I think they've kind of landed on this format compared to some of the ones before. You know, the Josh Hamilton one was one I think about too. Josh Hamilton and Justin Morneau, when Josh Hamilton sort of stole the show, but Justin Morneau won. Similar, as you said, with Vlad last year? Yeah. And with Pete Alonso winning. I think that what this allows for is it allows us to remember those kinds of things. People are going to remember Julio Rodriguez. Yeah. And the show that he put on, just like we remember Vlad, you know, I'm sure Mets fans remember finally the Pete Alonso that he won, but people are going to remember the show that Vlad put on. And I think that's really what matters. And Julio Rodriguez is definitely a great coming out party for him. He did better than I expected. I was talking about it with the guys on my baseball team, and I said, if it was a hit, run, and throw competition, then I would have put all my money on Julio Rodriguez. But he showed tons of power and looked great, and it's just like a great young star in the game. But fun. I mean, my thing is people seem to like it. I remember some of the earlier iterations and the different versions of it just being boring, right? It just drags on and on and on. You're sitting on the field watching.
I was a part of it. I was a part of it in 2011. And I think that was the last year that the format was where it was 10 outs and it took forever. I remember looking back behind me and I was like, where did everyone go? I was like one of the few sitting there because I wanted to take it in, but obviously the veteran guys weren't going to sit there through it all 3.5 hours that it took. And it did take forever. This format is fun. Don't get me wrong, but it's just, I don't know if they should just change a little bit of the, I don't know. I don't know how you can make it a little bit better and stuff like that. But other than that, like you said, it's entertainment and that's what, and the fans were entertained.
Where was the game in 2011? I don't remember.
Arizona.
Arizona, okay. And the roof was obviously closed. It's July in Arizona. That's fun. Yeah. And sorry, go ahead.
And I was saying the All-Star game obviously itself was fun, man. I think what stole the show and everyone seems to be talking about is Alek Manoah being mic'd up. And we caught a glimpse of who he is as a person when he's on the mound. Mm-hmm. And they asked him after the show, they're like, did you have to like kind of bleep some stuff out because you knew you were on the mic? And he goes, no, not really. This is who I am. You talk to my infielders, this is how I'm talking every time I strike somebody out or I do something good. And we just saw this this ginormous dude, and we saw the personality, the smile, the charisma that he has. And I think the whole nation, the whole country, like, fell in love with him.
For sure. He's a star, right? Like, Alec Manoah is a star. He's big, bigger than life. Somebody was talking, there was a photo of all the Jays All-Stars, and every time you see a photo and Alec Manoah is in it, it's like he takes up the whole picture. He's just a big dude with a big personality. Also, he's got that, like, Miami accent that is just, for me, bewildering. Like, it's so distinct, right? People from Miami and like, true Southern Florida, people who probably speak, like, you know, maybe Spanish at home and stuff. It is just such a specific accent, but it's always cool to hear it because you don't get to hear those guys talk very often. I was really, really interested in this. And both Nestor Cortez and Alec Manoah did it. So they're mic'd up and they're talking. Obviously, both those guys actually were pitching to their own catcher, so there's a little bit more comfort. But when Manoah, they were in his ear being like, "What I want," I can't remember who it was. Might have been
John Smoltz.
Was it Smoltz? Who was trying to tell him to throw the slider, like, over the outside corner. And Alec Manoah was like, no, I think if we execute fastball, we'll get it by him. We throw him a lot of sinkers. We can throw that four-seamer and we'll get it past him. And in his own admission, in the moment, it was like, well, right down the middle, but it'll take it, because it was a good pitch and it kind of got him off balance. And Cortez was the same thing, where they both went to the fastball in those two strike situations. They talked about it with their catchers and stuff. And I find that really interesting, because there's so much is made about how many sliders are in the game today, and everybody's breaking ball, but it doesn't matter. And the both Cortez and Manoah, they're not the hardest throwers in the world. A good fastball is always going to be your best pitch. It's the best pitch for the best pitchers, and it always works. And it's, again, when it's well executed, as Manoah said, you can get a lot of swing and miss and get a lot of strikeouts and a lot of outs with it.
Yeah. And I also like what he said. He's like, I feel like in this inning, you got a little bit of who I am as a pitcher. I hit guys, but I also strike out guys. And that's great. What a great line, right? I mean, and that's who he really is. He's going to go out there and he might hit a guy or two, but he ain't going to back down from, like, the strike zone. He's going to continue to attack and pitch the way he knows how to pitch. And you mentioned that sequence that he wanted to do. Oh, if I show him slider here, you know what? I shown him two sinkers that maybe a fastball up and in is going to fool him. And that's the way that he's thinking. And it's amazing that at a young age like that, you're able to think like that and dissect your game and know who you are as a pitcher, because sometimes that's the biggest thing, is figuring out who you are as a pitcher. He knows who he is. He knows what he wants to do. He knows what kind of game plan he wants to have with the hitters. And again, he's a guy that was smiling and all that, but I can tell you that he did not want any of those guys to get on base or anything like that. And another part that I thought was funny was, like, how he said that he usually struggles against left-handed hitters. And the first two guys were, like, Doc Peterson and who was the second guy he faced? It was another lefty. And he was just laughing. He was laughing about it. And again, I think we got to see a little bit of who he is. And I like it. I like it in the All-Star game when these guys are mic'd up and you get the raw emotion out of them. And, you know, the inning ends and he said, what does he say? That was a hell of a bullpen right there, boys. And
he was right too, because that American League bullpen in particular just absolutely shut down. I think they gave up one hit after the first inning when the National League hit those home runs. One hit, just one monster after another coming out of the American League bullpen. The whole game was just like a real testament to the state of pitching right now. Just so many good guys. And good to see Dusty Baker doing whatever he can to get guys in, kind of taking advantage of the fact that the three-batter rule wasn't in place. So times for guys that don't get a lot, you know, the Jorge Lopez's of the world. And my God, Manuel Clase, like, what on earth is he throwing?
Hey, man.
I've seen it before, but I'm just like, I was laughing. I was laughing watching it on TV. Like, what? Yeah. What even is this?
Yeah. Nasty. Pure nasty.
100 miles an hour.
Filthiness, man. And going back to you saying crediting Dusty Baker about getting guys in, I wish Ron Washington would have taken a page out of his book with me. Shit.
Blue Jays fan, there was a lot of talk I saw about people, the Yankees fans and Orioles fans, talking about Mike Mussina, Cito, the most controversial All-Star decision of all time. whereas Messina, of course, got up without being asked. Apparently, there's a lot of details. There's a lot of a lot of stuff.
You know what, man? This is the thing that I see, like in my experience, there was a lot of 1 year guys, first time guys, and I feel like they all got into the game except me. Really? And I looked around and I was like, it was like me and Jose Valverde. And obviously Valverde had pitched in maybe a couple, but I was like, man, you could have gotten me at least an out. Just to say you did it, right? I mean, and again, I was going in with the intention that, hey, if the game's tied, you're the long relief guy, but what are the odds that's going to happen again? You know, and I just feel like, you know, and I kid around when I say I'm mad at Rod Washington, but, I did want to get into that game, and I feel like, you know, there was obviously an opportunity to maybe get in that game, but it didn't happen. And
it wasn't you didn't start right before the break or anything like that. No, you were good. No. You were on the rest and stuff.
I was rested, ready to go. I warmed up and I was like, maybe there's a chance, but obviously I was probably the only one praying that there was a tie going into the ninth inning and I can get in.
It's interesting to hear that you say that, because I don't know if you saw on the broadcast, they showed Ron Washington working with Pete Alonso. Yeah, working on like those one hoppers and just like, which I thought was really cool to see, because it's the All-Star game and they're you know, Ron Washington works for Atlanta, and yeah, here we are.
Yeah, no, he's really a funny guy, man. I wish I had a recorded piece of his pregame speech and all that. And obviously he was a manager of the Texas Rangers at the time.
I just clued in. You just said pregame speech in the All-Star game. And I was like, that means that you heard the Ichiro speech.
I didn't. He wasn't there that year.
Are you fucking kidding? Yeah. I'm so mad.
Yeah, no, it was.
No, that sucks.
It was just him. It was just him. I think it was, I think that's the year maybe Derek Jeter decided to skip the All-Star game. Mariano Rivera skipped the All-Star game. Some big names skipped the All-Star. CeCe Sabathia, I want to say maybe too. I'm not sure, but yeah, it was just Ron Washington talking, and you saw his personality, and he's all about the game, man. And you see the passion that he has with his infielders, and to be able to do that with Pete Alonso, who they're chasing. I mean, but it speaks volumes. That's the way baseball should be. And it's teaching moments, teaching stuff that can help him better his game. Not that, like, who cares? Like, it, you know, if you guys are rivals within the division and stuff like that, but if you can get something out of it, which is, I feel like, you know, Alec Manoa talking about Justin Verlander and how much he was going to try and talk to him and pick his brain. All that stuff is good, man. For me, back in that clubhouse, and we were both young pups, Gio Gonzalez and was my guy, you know, he was my throwing partner, and just talking grips, sitting there, like all that stuff that you wish as a fan, like you're like, I wish I could be a fly on the wall so I can listen to the conversation that these guys are having. Because, you know, another guy that comes to mind, and there's video of it, of Mariano Rivera and Doc Halliday talking about the cutter. Like, wouldn't you just want to be like for 3 minutes, just have the camera and a mic on them and just hear what they're talking about and like all that stuff.
100%. I said the exact same thing on the radio about last week about the opportunity for a guy like Alec Manoa and Jordan Romano as well, to just be in there and like having those conversations and being, you know, with someone like Romano asking somebody like, how do you throw your changeup? You know, well, you know, I grip it like this, and somebody else can say, oh, I put it here and I put it back in my fingers or whatever else. I think it's so valuable, especially because, like you said, that's what baseball should be. And it's, you know, it's everybody, you know, there's that kind of fraternity idea, and you're just sort of, you can all kind of root for each other, and you go out there when it's time to play and you're trying to win the division. You're going to do everything you can to beat them. But at the same time, you know, nobody understands better the challenges of doing it than the guys who are also doing it on the other side of the field. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
By the way, I'm looking at the box score now from the 2011 All-Star Game, and wow, this is a real remember some guys moments here. Chris Perez, famous for for barfing on the mound, famous to me anyway, for throwing up on the mound. Your former teammate Brandon League,
yeah, it was our first All-Star Game, man. I'm telling you, I was probably the only first timer that didn't get in the game.
Gio got in, it looks like,
yeah.
Oh, Jair Jurgens was in there. Johnny Venters at the peak of his powers.
Yeah.
Throwing 99% sinkers in there. Yeah. Jose Bautista was, of course, in the game as well. Josh Hamilton, Adrian Gonzalez, Miguel Cabrera coming off the bench. Johnny Peralta, Asdrubal Cabrera. Man. Oh, Curtis Granderson, the king.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Curtis Granderson. That's a lot of fun, a lot of fun names. And it sounded like you had a great time, even though you didn't get in, unfortunately.
No, yeah, it was definitely a great time. And just to be able to share the clubhouse with the big poppies of the world, Miguel Cabrera, I mean, holy smokes. I mean, I think you caught a glimpse of the dream that Santiago Espinal was living. And obviously, you know, we can talk about Vladdy and all that stuff. And Vladdy is his second All-Star game, but it almost feels like he's on his 10th. It just seems like he's comfortable. He's a superstar in this game. And you see him at the home run derby cheering, and it's like it brings out the little kids in them, and they're all like cheering for their guys and stuff like that. But a Santiago Espinal, you got the raw like emotion out of him. Like it literally felt like he was living a true dream. I wish I could have seen how it was for him when he walked into that clubhouse and he sees all these stars, because we see the video of him meeting Pujols for the first time last season and how excited he was of that. And now you walk into a clubhouse for the first time, at least for me, it was like the first time you walk in and you start looking around, you see your jersey, you see your number, you see your nameplate, and then you start looking around and you're like, that's David Ortiz, that's Adrian Beltre, that's Paul Konerko, that's Miguel Cabrera. Those guys are my teammates for, you know, a couple of days. And Justin Verlander, Felix Hernandez, and just to be able to see a different side of them, you know, that's not a competitive side, it was really cool for me. And those are the memories that you take with you, and just to be able to share those moments and again, just to be able to pick these guys' brains. And, you know, Josh Beckett was another guy, and John Lester, these guys are like, were competitive to, you know, like crazy. When you saw them on the mound, you did not want to mess with them, but off the field, like, you know, you get to, you know, have a conversation with them and stuff like that. And, you know, and when they know your name, and you're just like, wow, this is surreal. Like, I'm an all-star, like, and I'm here with these guys as part of being their teammates. And I feel like Santiago Espinal got a little bit of that. And it's like, he just couldn't stop smiling and looking around. Like, is this really me? Like, am I doing this right now? And, you know, credit to him and everything he's been able to accomplish so far in his young career, because I always say this, don't take him for granted, because you just never know if that, you know, if you'll ever be there again. For me, it was only one, and that was it.
Yeah, I feel like you make a great point about Vlad in particular. Like, Vlad is that guy. He is a superstar, as you said, and it's, he is like one of the people that are helping to elevate the game. We were talking a little bit off air about the ratings. The TV ratings were really good, which is, you know, not the be all and end all, but it's something that, especially as baseball, you know, people, you sort of often feel, I find myself, you know, you're defending baseball's popularity, especially compared to like the NFL and the ratings and things like that. But it was a big event, and there, you know, for someone like Santiago Espinal, you hope, you know, that he can have a great career and make it back to a bunch more. But at the same time, this could be a one-time shot. Same with, you know, with anybody other than Vlad. I'm gonna just go ahead and go on a limb and say that the guy who's like the leading vote getter is gonna be back again. Also looking back at your game, very, let's talk about throwback. Roy Halladay threw two innings for the National League.
Shocker.
Day. Yeah. and then Cliff Lee tried to go two. He came back out for more as well. Funny.
Yeah.
Any other final All-Star game thoughts? Yeah, again, I think Manoa is kind of like the breakout star. It'd be great to see him kind of become that guy, become the star. He has everything you want. The other thing I would think too, and I was thinking about and thinking about the ratings, I think we're kind of starting to see the fact that, like, you know, and you saw it with the ESPYs as well, the kind of next night, like Shohei Ohtani is sort of getting to the point where he's like the biggest thing around, right? Like he's kind of almost like getting out of the baseball, you know, gravity, where he's becoming so famous, which I think is great. There's nobody better to kind of be that. I mean, he's not, I mean, just for what he is and for what he can do, I think we're starting to see that a little bit. And maybe that's part of, he's becoming like a draw just to be able to see, like, I watched Ohtani do his thing. Swinging at the first pitch, apparently he had said he was going to do it no matter what. Swinging at the first pitch no matter what, and he got base hit into center field. But a great opportunity for him. Again, a huge star and in a place like LA where, you know, close enough to where he plays, that lots of fans. And so I think it was a fun event. I think it was mostly successful, even if it's tough to get like a lot of atmosphere, and the game was nice. It moved well. It wasn't boring, although there wasn't a ton of offense, but a good weekend for everybody, a good week for everybody.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a good week. And again, yeah, like you mentioned, Alec Manoa stealing the show, but, you know, Alejandro Kirk doing his thing behind the plate, and just seeing these young guys take it all in, it just seems like they were having the time of their lives. And that's what it's about. The All-Star game is all about that. And, you know, to watch them on the red carpet and, you know, do their thing too. I think that's fun, man. That to me is, it's one of the coolest things that I think they've done. And I feel like it gets guys, my wife, we were sitting at dinner the other day and she's like, do you think you'd come out of your comfort zone for this red carpet? And I'm like, you know what? If they had it back in the day, which they did, but it wasn't quite like it. Like now it's like a fashion show. Who's going to be the loudest? Who's going to be wearing the craziest sunglasses, the craziest jewelry? They had MLB had an ice cam, you know, and these guys have like,
oh, really?
Yeah, they had an ice cam, and Vladdy, you know, with a bunch of chains. And again, it just brings out a different, I guess, theme of what we're used to seeing these guys on the field. Obviously, we see them on the field. We see them as, you know, Vladdy just being Vladdy and stuff like that. But when they're off and they're doing that red carpet event and they're part of that show, it's like, hey, you get to become who you really are. And I feel like that's fun. And I think I would have came out of my comfort zone if they had that back in the day. At least my wife, if I was dating her at the time, she probably would have made me like, hey, let's just, you know, go out there and get you some sweet, sweet gear. And I definitely would have done that for sure.
I have to think that Alec Manoa won the biggest sunglasses competition. Number one, he's got a lot of head. That's a big dude. I gotta guess his hat size starts with an 8. I think he's got Bruce Bochy vibes, but just enormous sunglasses, and it looked good. And again, a really cool star turn for him. Now, I should ask you real quick. You know, it's kind of, we've covered it a bunch on this show, but your thoughts on the kind of the Charlie Montoyo situation, the Blue Jays moving on, going to John Schneider, seemed to a lot of people, especially, you know, those of, you know, someone like me who's like a little bit more on the outside, very much a surprise. Didn't think it was going to happen like this, but then their stories start to change, and it seems like it was maybe something that was in the works or on, kind of, not, it wasn't overdue, but maybe it was in fact the right time to make a move.
Yeah, I mean, and it's crazy because you listen to what Bo Bichette had to say, and, you know, he said he felt like management had to make a move, and he didn't disagree with it. So I feel like that should tell you a little bit of what was going on in that clubhouse. And obviously, you know, some people may beg to differ that, hey, you know what, he didn't deserve to be fired, but the team was coming off an awful, awful road trip. And maybe some stuff was going on in the clubhouse. Nobody knows that, but the guys that are in there, right? Grinding out every single day. We can all speculate about it. Go ahead.
No. You've just said the key word. I don't mean to interrupt you. You said the key word, something that I talked to you about in 2012 or 13, was the word grind. And I know that there were Caitlin in her story had some quotes that were anonymous, but about sometimes you need somebody to come in and kind of kick your ass. And sometimes you need a bit of a kick in the butt. And I know that some fans bristle at that. They're like, these guys are making this much money, but it's a real grind, right? And I don't think that we don't appreciate what it means to go to the ballpark every single day and put that work in and do all those things and be able to be motivated and not to just sort of go through the motions, like still doing the work, but not having that sort of pep in your step or that fire in your under your ass to go in with that sort of certain sense of urgency. So that's something that has really given me pause, because it's easy to be like, well, you can't get motivated. You guys are 1-9 and you don't think you need to go out and work hard. But sometimes the grind of it all is just so overwhelming, I think, at times, that I don't think it's hard for us outside to appreciate it.
Yeah. And this is the thing too, Drew, when looking back at it, and it's not the exact quote, but I remember when Charlie came out and said that the players held a meeting and that he liked how the leaders of the team stepped up. And he's like, sometimes, you know, I don't like to talk because that brings panic. And I'm like sitting there and I'm like, panic? Like, these are grown ass men. Like, you need to go in there and these guys should, you know, we talk about managers who you would run through a brick wall for. Like, you want to be that. I feel like, I mean, in my opinion, I think you want to be that type of manager where your players are like, we'll do anything for our manager. And it just seems like that wasn't there. When he said that, I was like, huh, like, you know what? Like, again, these are grown men that understand the job in front of them. You can go in there and talk to them. They're not, you know what, to say that they're going to panic. I mean, come on, like there's only a certain, players can do certain things and try and pump each other up, but there's a higher up and you're the manager. You're the face of the team. Like, you should want to be in those meetings, leading them and making sure that, hey, what is it that we need to do? What is it that we need to get better? Let's get this right, because I'm here grinding with you guys and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get you guys to that next level where we want to get.
There, Stoughton, who used to host this a different version of this podcast with, did something really interesting. He wrote about, you know, the different perceptions of Charlie Montoya and went back to when he was first hired. And he had some quotes from guys like Justin Ruggiano and some players who played for him in AAA. And that one of the things that they kept, you know, that Stoughton highlighted it through their quotes in a story that maybe Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet wrote, but it was like it was in the minor leagues, it was Charlie's show, and Charlie like ran a tight ship. And, you know, the quotes were like, he would pull, if you didn't hustle, run out a ground ball, doesn't matter, ninth inning of a blowout, or you've been on the buses, he was like, he would get on your ass. And he was really specific about how he wanted and expected his team to run. You know, the players all said they knew that he was on their side, and that was definitely clearly communicated, but he was had maybe a little bit of a stronger hand in the minor leagues, where maybe the sense in the big leagues, but he was almost deferring too much to the players. Maybe that overly friendly or too much positivity at a time where they needed somebody to kind of make sure that reestablish the expectations, reestablish sort of where they are. And like you said, asking that question, what do we need to do? As opposed to being like, you guys know best, which, you know, the players do know best, but sometimes you need somebody to kind of marshal all those efforts into one direction.
100%. I agree. I agree with that. And it's one of those things, like I mentioned, you want a manager that's going to go out there, that's going to fight for you, that's going to, you know, if there's a meeting to be had, I'm going to lead it and I'm going to, you know, lay down the law. This is what needs to happen. This is where we need to go. This is the direction we need to go in. And I believe Snitker from the Braves had a meeting this season already, where he like said, if you guys don't give a fuck, I won't give a fuck, you know, type thing. I'm not quoting him, but something along those lines like that. And it's like, that's the guy that I want leading my team. You know, that's a guy that I want to run through a brick wall for. And it just seemed like, yeah, with Charlie, it was just, I don't know if he wasn't getting the best out of his players. And again, we can sit here and dissect it all we want. The guys that are in the clubhouse, in that clubhouse, know what really happened and how it was going. And you know what? You move on from it. It happened, and now it's John Schneider's time to shine. And again, a guy that I know personally really, really well, and a guy that caught me out through the minor leagues, and we spent so much time together. And he's paid his dues. And when I see, like, you know, the Vladdy's of the world, Bijos, Bichettes, Romanos of the world, those are the guys he's kind of watched grow. in this organization. He's watched them grow from when they first signed. I mean, Schneider started at the rookie ball level, and he's kind of earned his stripes as he moved on and kept winning. So now you put him in the mix, and now he knows these guys. It's not like it's completely they didn't bring somebody, you know, that the players don't know. They're familiar with this guy, and I feel like he's gonna bring out a different side out of him. And you know, he's got a lot of pressure because, again, this team was built to win this year, Drew. And if they don't, I almost feel like it's his job to lose for next season. And if he's able to get the best out of these guys, then we might see him again next season.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors. Now, what's it going to take, I guess, in the second half for this team to do that? I think, you know, we're seeing the Blue Jays continue to sort of reach out and try to grab a winning combination or change the makeup in the bullpen. Sergio Romo was designated for assignment, and he's opted for free agency. They've signed, what's this guy's name? Vidi Nitolini, just trying to find something that can kind of work in the bullpen. What do you expect to see in the second half from the Blue Jays? Do you think they're going to make a big move, a couple medium-sized moves? Or do you think that the guys that are there are going to be able to step their play up to the next level in the second half?
It'll be interesting what they do. Again, the trade deadline to me is going to be really, really interesting this season. And what is it, in 10, 11, 12 days that we're going to be that we're going to be talking about what's going to be done with this team. And obviously a name that I've heard floating around out there, Drew, is Michael Conforto. Like, does he fit this team? Can he come and help this team? Is he healthy enough? Obviously Scott Boras came out and said that, you know, he's getting back to full health. And you have to sit and wonder if the Jays entertained that idea. Obviously you see it on Twitter, the Juan Soto sweepstakes. Does he end up getting traded? What do you give up for him? And does he look good in a Blue Jays lineup? Of course he would look good and great in a Blue Jays lineup. You know? So there's all these questions, obviously, from the offensive side, from the bullpen side. I think it's a tough market. It's going to be a lot of teams are still in it. And it's just whether those teams decide to be sellers. And if they say, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're 6-7 games out of the wild card, but we don't see us making enough ground that, yeah, we'll trade away some guys and build for our future. So the relievers is an interesting case. I just wonder how that's going to play out. And obviously we've been saying it all season that the Blue Jays do need a Emmanuel Clase type guy in the back end of that rotation.
Yeah, I think they could use one of those. I keep thinking about Clase. I wouldn't say he reminds me of Andrew Miller, but the fact that he was throwing that cutter and it was essentially going right down the middle and they were taking it, like taking strikes and swinging at balls, to me is like, that's the perfect reliever in a lot of ways. Get them to swing at balls and take strikes. But the whole what's going to happen over the break and coming down the stretch is going to be really interesting. I think the Blue Jays have quite a few of the guys kind of going in the right direction at this point. You know, in terms of Teoscar Hernandez has really been swinging the bat well. You know, Jose Berríos is pitching well, in addition to the fact that they've been winning games even when he wasn't pitching well. Jimmy Garcia looked so good last time,
yeah,
going two innings. And his, you know, I was looking at his Statcast numbers the other day, and they're crazy. He's like just really, really having a good year. There's just, you know, and all those sort of things start to kind of cascade, right? Then you allow some more clarity and less work for the Tim Mazes, for the Trevor Richards, for everybody on down the line. You know, the Juan Soto thing is crazy to think of. I can't get my head there where they are going to trade him in the next 2 weeks. I think it's too big a trade. I don't think you can't rush that deal unless somebody blows you away with a crazy offer. But
yeah,
but I feel like
it's going to be hard. And I think, you know what, if he does get traded, he's going to get traded to a team that has, you know, maybe the top three farms in the big leagues. I think that's what it comes down to. And what assets can we add to our organization? And maybe, you know, 2-3 big leaguers. I don't know. It's going to be a big haul. And like you mentioned, it's one of those deals where it can get really, really complicated, because who do you give up? You have to get, I don't know if you can get equal value, but you have to make sure that when you pull the trigger on this deal, it's definitely going to make your organization somewhat better in the future.
A lot of talk about Patrick Corbin, you know, his contract. I mean, which is, I think he's only got two years and like $60 million left. So it's a lot of money. A consideration for the Blue Jays is that I feel confidently that he is not vaccinated and wouldn't be able to come to Toronto, Patrick Corbin, which if you're the Blue Jays, maybe is the worst thing in the world. Like, oh, he's on the restricted list. He doesn't get paid when he's here in Canada. But
yeah,
but well, let me, this is a bit of an unfair question, and some of the trade scenarios you're seeing, and people are putting together these trade packages, fans and, you know, the four guys who used to be in the game and former GMs and stuff. I've seen Bo Bichette's name included in a few different deals. What are you, is that something that you'd be willing to entertain, or is he too crucial a piece to the big league club that you can't, that's like, you know, one step forward, two steps back?
Again, this deal, it can get so complicated like that. It can like where you have to part ways with the guy that, you know, the city has fallen in love with. And,
I would say that I have been, I wouldn't say critical. I think that I am aware of what Bo Bichette is and isn't. Do I want necessarily to be in the business of like having 30-year-old Bo Bichette be my starting shortstop? Maybe not. But 24-year-old Bo Bichette, 25, 26, like the time that he's still on, you know, his contract is with the Blue Jays, I don't think you can trade him. It's even in this year when he's not as good as he has been, he's still like an above average hitter and like a at worst an average defensive shortstop. Yeah. That's a good combination. There are not a lot of those guys kicking around that you can just happily pop in. And the idea that Santiago Espinal could maybe step in and do that every day is that's pushing. You're asking a lot of Santiago Espinal to be your everyday shortstop.
And I think one of the biggest things I've heard about Bo Bichette is that he's a hard, hard worker. Behind closed doors, he's one of the hardest workers there is. He's a guy that wants to win at whatever it takes. And when you take that into the equation, again, there isn't many of those guys floating around. And I'm not saying, you know, everyone wants to win. Everyone wants to work hard. But I feel like they say he's on another level of hard work and what he's all about. So It'd be tough because if you make a deal like that, you probably are going to see a name that you're like, you wish didn't. But sometimes in order to get a player, you have to be willing to give something to them. You can't just say, oh yeah, here's our top five prospects and that's it. Like it doesn't work like that. And I feel like when you see trade scenarios, sometimes from fans, from people on Twitter, it's like, well, what are you really giving the Nationals there? Like, come on, man. Like,
they're not here to do you a favor because they don't like Juan Soto.
Exactly.
Well, I guess so there are lots of potential, lots of different moves to come here in the second half. One thing I saw, actually, somebody who writes about the Red Sox said that maybe the Red Sox or a team that should be sellers. And that opens up a whole lot of really interesting scenarios. Maybe not necessarily for the Blue Jays. I somehow can't imagine the Blue Jays and the Red Sox pulling off like a significant deadline deal. Of course, they did, of course, trade, you know, Steve Pearce for Santiago Espinal here in 2018. But if somebody else is able to make a deal with the Red Sox, then that maybe leaves some of the other options open for the Blue Jays. One thing, you know, we talked a little bit about this, Caitlin and I, the Blue Jays had their draft. You know, the draft was on the Sunday night. Maybe concern isn't the right word. I find it interesting that they selected high school pitcher in the first round. But somebody that folks think highly of, and I think the Blue Jays' recent success with Ricky Tiedemann maybe makes it easier to believe, and you can get your head there with the idea of a high school pitcher. Can you imagine if you had been drafted at high school? Were you ready to go and be a professional?
No. But I also wasn't a first rounder.
True.
I was drafted in a round that doesn't even exist nowadays. You know, 37th round. Wasn't ready. But, you know, obviously we live in a time where there's all these pitchers throw hard and you kind of see the projection and you see the, you know, what the future can be ahead of this guy. And this kid said, hey, the other 22 teams are going to regret it. And you're like, whoa, okay. You know, you kind of like that confidence coming in. But again, nobody can prepare you for pro ball. I'm sure, was this kid from the IMG Academy? something like that?
Barriera? I don't remember exactly, but he is an interesting interesting quotes. I agree. Like that willingness. And there was the other thing too, Taylor Thoman, who was like, I was hoping the Blue Jays were going to draft me, which is, I think, super interesting.
And I think it's the culture that they're building here, honestly. I mean, you look at Alek Manoah and stuff like that, and you're like, I want to be part of that team. I want to be part of the everything they got going there. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Again, it's one of those things where you don't know how good you have it in this city till you come and play here. And when you realize that, shoot, we saw, credit to her, Shannon Curley got a great article written about her today on Sportsnet. And it's like, it talks about her job, what she does, how she makes players feel comfortable. I'm telling you, Drew, not a lot of teams have somebody like that, where they're able to make your family feel at ease coming into a new country and your kids and all that good stuff. And I feel like the more the word gets out, the more players are going to want to come and play here. What, again, you win here, you'll be forever, ever loved. And I see the love, and I didn't even win here. You know, my teams didn't go to the playoffs or anything like that. And I feel the love, and I see the love that people show towards me. And it's always cool when you come back here and you're able to see that.
Definitely something to consider. That was a great story that David Singh wrote there on Sportsnet about. I don't even know how, if I could describe the job that she does accurately, but it's almost like a fixer, but a fixer for everything, because it is a challenge. A lot of these guys like this, or people get to the big league, especially if they are a free agent, like a George Springer, or whatever, they've never lived in Canada. This is a whole new thing for them. So lots of different hurdles to jump, lots of different things to do. I think, you know, I cover the Blue Jays and I'm a Blue Jays fan. So I feel like the idea that the Blue Jays can confidently draft a high school pitcher in the first round, I believe in their ability to kind of take it slow. They've got this amazing facility. They're developing a track record for converting guys like this, for turning them into viable big leaguers and working with them and letting them get the most out of their career. I think that's it goes a long way. It's a really good time.
Yeah, and
to be
you can never go wrong with left-handed pitching either. And if he and you wish him good luck and you wish him the best, because again, he's stepping into a organization that's first class all the way. And you mentioned those facilities. I mean, when he walks in there, he's going to be blown away with everything they got. So, yeah, I mean, the draft, I just feel like obviously it's changed over the years. And again, it's very handful of guys selected now. And I feel like there's a little bit more attention maybe to detail nowadays, because you really can't miss on the amount of draft picks that you have. You really want to maximize what you have in front of you and who you're able to choose from. And I feel like now the organizations have to tighten it up a little bit, because before 50 rounds, it's like, oh yeah, like we have so much room to work with. Now there isn't much room. So you hope that they got it right with this kid and he comes out there and does his thing for a few years. And next thing you know, we'll see him in the big leagues.
Next thing you know, we'll see the Blue Jays back in the field against the Red Sox. Got a bunch of that's, which is again a really important series. I think anytime you can face those teams that you're right there in the mix with it, the sooner that you can close the casket on the corpse of the Red Sox, the better. Get them out of the way, because like you can't trust them. God only knows what's gonna, obviously the Red Sox are still struggling with injuries. They get Chris Sale back and then he blows up his finger. He probably won't pitch again this year. Difficult for them, tough for him. Again, as I've said many times, one of my favorite pitchers to watch, even though if he's not maybe the most charming guy in the big leagues, but what can you, hey, I interviewed Chris Sale years ago. He was super nice, but that does not mean that he's not that. He was nice to me, but he was like a rookie, so he didn't know any better.
Yeah. No,
anything else?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the second half for the Toronto Blue Jays. Obviously their first half, you know, I feel like we held them to a super high standard, and I'm sure they did too. And But they're still in the mix of things. Nothing's been won. Nothing's been lost yet for this team. I'm curious to see what if they're going to be active at the deadline, what they go for. But again, I'm excited to see them back in action. And what better way to start against another good team in the Boston Red Sox. And again, if they put an end to their season, that'd be great for the Blue Jays. But I don't see them doing that.
No, the Red Sox will not go away. They will not go so lightly. Great opportunity for the Blue Jays to keep that momentum up through the All-Star break. Hopefully they can come out playing well as they did to finish the break and really put themselves in a position to A, be aggressive at the trade deadline if they, you know, which I think we can assume that they will at least try, and then head into August and into September with some winning baseball. His name is Ricky Romero. My name is Drew Fairservice. We will talk. He and I will be back next week. Caitlin McGrath and I will be back next week as we continue the second half on this and many other episodes of Spinning.